The caterpillar and Alice looked at each other for some time in silence. At last the caterpillar took the hookah out of its mouth and addressed her in a languid, sleepy voice. "Who are you?" said the caterpillar. This was not an encouraging opening for a conversation. Alice replied rather shyly, I hardly know, sir, just at present. At least I know who I was when I got up this morning, but I think I must have been changed several times since then. What do you mean by that? Said the caterpillar sternly. Explain yourself. I can't explain myself, I'm afraid, sir, said Alice, because I'm not myself, you see. I don't see, said the caterpillar. I'm afraid I can't put it more clearly, Alice replied very politely, for I can't understand it myself, to begin with, and being so many different sizes in a day is very confusing. It isn't, said the caterpillar. Well, perhaps you haven't found it so yet, said Alice, but when you have to turn into a chrysalis, you will someday, you know, and then after that into a butterfly, I should think you'll feel it a little queer, won't you? Not a bit, said the caterpillar. Well, perhaps your feelings may be different, said Alice. All I know is, it would be very queer to me. You, said the caterpillar contemptuously, who are you? Which brought them back again to the beginning of the conversation.
The author of that confrontation was Lewis Carroll, but it could be you. The Author is You, a Wisconsin School of the Air series about the process of writing creatively. To conduct today's program, here's children's author Jacqueline Jackson.
Who are you? The caterpillar asked Alice. In one way, that is a terribly simple question to answer. But if you look at it in other sorts of ways, it's one of the hardest questions in the world to answer. But it's one of the most interesting and intriguing and fun to try. A long, long time ago, the Greek philosopher Socrates uttered his most famous words, which were, "Know thyself." This knowing ourselves is probably the most basic thing that we can do, and it's a very human question, too. It marks a real difference between us and the animals. We can ask this question, who are we? But no dog or no cat contemplates who he is. We can remember who we were yesterday, and we can think about and conjecture who we might be tomorrow. Not only that, but we can decide what we would like to be, or what we don't like in ourselves, and deliberately try to change it, and often to succeed. We can become different people by an act of the will. Well, how do we get to know ourselves? This is an entirely different kettle of fish. When people ask us who we are, we usually respond with our name. And this is also a very human sort of thing. We have organized our world by naming it. We name trees, flowers, shrubs, animals, people, and this helps us to organize and to understand. Without any name, we're nobody. There's an interesting book by Weir that's called The Loner. And in this story, the boy doesn't have any name, and his whole story is a search to find his own name and then his own identity, who he is. You've undoubtedly studied something about the Indians and how they didn't receive, in certain tribes, their full name until a certain age, at which time it would be revealed to them who they were, and they would get a name. We all of us have more than one name. We have our full name, our given name that's on the legal documents that were filled out when we were born. We have pet names, nicknames. Our last name is the same as the rest of our family, but our first name has been chosen for us by parents or sometimes by other people. We have our own secret names, how we think of ourselves. We might also consider the names that other people call us, sometimes insultingly. So that a name is a fixed point. It's a sort of anchor in finding out who we are. In many ways, our names are us, and we live into our names, and our names live into us. So a good place to begin in thinking about who we are, or writing about it, is in thinking about our own name, how we came to be named it, what our family name means, what all these other names mean, how many names we have. There's another passage from Alice in Wonderland where she's considering who she is and begins thinking about her name. "Dear, dear, how queer everything is today. And yesterday things went on just as usual. I wonder if I've been changed in the night. Let me think. Was I the same when I got up this morning? I almost think I can remember feeling a little different. But if I'm not the same, the next question is, who in the world am I? Ah, that's the great puzzle." And she began thinking over all the children she knew that were of the same age as herself to see if she could have been changed to any of them. "I'm sure I'm not Ada," she said, "for her hair goes in such long ringlets, and mine doesn't go in ringlets at all. And I'm sure I can't be Mabel, for I know all sorts of things, and she, oh, she knows such a very little. Besides, she's she, and I'm I, and oh, dear, how puzzling it all is." And then she tries to find out if she knows anything by reciting poetry and other school lessons, and then she comes back to Mabel. "I'm sure these are not the right words," said poor Alice, and her eyes filled with tears again as she went on. "I must be Mabel after all, and I shall have to go and live in that poky little house and have next to no toys to play with and, oh, ever so many lessons to learn. No, I've made up my mind about it. If I'm Mabel, I'll stay down here. It'll be no use their putting their heads down and saying, 'Come up again, dear.' I shall only look up and say, 'Who am I, then? Tell me that first, and if I like being that person, I'll come up. If not, I'll stay down here till I'm somebody else.'" Alice also brings up in this passage and the other that I read some interesting truths about who we are. She's talking about change. She says, "I knew who I was when I got up, but now I must have changed several times since then." And then she also has said, you know, "Was I the same when I got up?" How often do we change as people? We're in a process of continual change, actually. Everything that is going on is changing us. We don't harden like jello. You talk about people being set in their ways, and the older people get, the idea is the more set in their ways they are, which is true. But I think that I know that people can still change. I experienced it myself. I thought that I knew pretty well who I was, and a few years ago I surprised myself considerably by abruptly changing in certain areas. And this brought in a whole new factor of knowing myself, which was to realize that I can never know myself fully, that I'm unpredictable. I can surprise myself at 50 or 60 or 70 or even 90 if I should live that long. There's a poem by Walter Delamere that talks about changing. Just as eating makes us grow and change in our bodies, all the things, the experiences that we have, the things we read, the people we meet, all these have their way of changing us too. And in this poem, he's talking about food. But as you know, a poem can mean many more things than it appears to on the surface. And I think that Walter Delamere was talking about a lot more than food in his poem called Miss Tea. "It's a very odd thing, as odd as can be, that whatever Miss Tea eats turns into Miss Tea. Porridge and apples, mince muffins and mutton, jam junket jumbles, not a wrap, not a button, it matters. The moment they're out of her plate, though shared by Miss Butcher and sour Mr. Bate, tiny and cheerful and neat as can be, whatever Miss Tea eats turns into Miss T." Well, now, we're not only changing in time so that we were a different person yesterday than we are today and we're going to be a different person tomorrow, but right now, at this very instant, I think that we are many people. Or else, if we are just one, we're one as a tree is, that we have trunk, we have bark, we have roots, we have leaves, branches, twigs, and all these are quite different sorts of things. It's like the old story of the blind men and the elephant, where they each feel the elephant in a different place, and one holds his leg and says he's like a tree trunk, and another holds his tail and says he's like a rope, and another holds his trunk and says he's like a snake, and so forth. We have many persons within us, many facets, many handles. You've heard perhaps the term that a person is two-faced, and this is supposed to be a bad thing. And yet I maintain that people not only are two-faced, but they're dozen-faced, and they do not always present the same face to different people. Your reactions to a little brother, who you are to him, is somewhat different from who you are to your parents or to your teacher or to strangers or to certain friends. We're all of us different people in different situations. A fun game to play might be to list all the different things that you are. Child, student, girl, sister, daughter, friend, dog lover, and then other sorts of things, your social security number, which maybe you have even at your age, to the advertisers, you're a consumer. You are a citizen. You are a black or a white person. You may be a southpaw, a lefty. You may be a sucker to the carnival people. I think if you started a list like that, you'd find that it would go on forever. You would never get to the end of all the different things that you are. And each one of these shows your relationship to something, to the carnival man. And that relationship is slightly different or very different, depending on who it's with. So that when, after the caterpillar says to Alice, "Explain yourself," and she says, "I'm not myself," actually she is herself. What she is experiencing is the ambiguity of who she is. She is discovering how many different people she is, and this is very confusing to her. You've probably heard that term used on yourself or on other people. "He's not himself today." Well, what that means really is that he's not behaving in his usual manner, the manner that you've become accustomed to. And yet, if you're usually a quiet sort of retiring person and one day you're rowdy and everybody is astonished, why should that surprise them? Why shouldn't there be some different aspect to your nature? Why do you always have to be the same? At a conference recently, somebody drew a picture and discussed ourselves in, I thought, a very interesting way. It was called a Johari window, and it was a square which was then cut across as a child would draw a window, making four squares. And the whole picture was me. The upper left-hand corner was the me that I know and also that you know. The upper right-hand corner was the me that I don't know, but that you do. That's the one that you see in the advertisements about your best friend won't tell you that you have bad breath or something like that. Characteristics that other people know about you, but that you are unaware of yourself. Then the lower left-hand corner was the me that I know, but that you don't know. This is our secret selves, our secret names, our secret thoughts, that other people aren't in on. And then the lower right-hand corner is the most mysterious corner of all, because that is the me that I don't know and that you don't know either. This is the part that I call the 9/10 of the iceberg, the part that's hidden below the surface. It's our subconscious. It's so secret that we don't know it ourselves. And this, of course, is the part that is constantly surprising us. Things will happen down in that lower right-hand corner of the secret unknown self that will change us and that will surprise us. These two bottom boxes, the secret self that I know and the secret self that I don't know, I call the secret garden, after a book that perhaps you've read. These are the parts that seem to me to be the most nearly me, and that these are the parts that it is fun to try to reveal in writing, because your subconscious self, the self that you don't know, can come out in writing. Let's talk about writing about ourselves. Why should we do it? Well, writing is one of the best ways to help us to understand who we are. Our thoughts, our feelings are a jumble inside ourselves, a sort of unfocused mass, and if we start to write down who we are, we get those thoughts and feelings out, and we begin to see patterns and to get a picture of ourselves. It helps us to understand ourselves because our writing is us, and it also lets others know who we are. And human beings need this sort of community. We need to know that we're not all alone, that we can share ourselves with others and let them see us and us to see them. But in such a rich and complex subject as ourselves, how do we begin? There's a book called Can't You Hear Me Talking to You by Carolyn Murthus. She was a school teacher, and one day she said that she put a composition title on the blackboard, Who Am I? I did not tell the students what to write or how. I simply asked them, what is it that makes you special or different from every other person in this class, neighborhood, country, or world? What is it that you have that no one else has? I honestly had no idea what to expect. And what she got from that question is published in a whole book of the students writing who they were. Don't try to write an encyclopedic entry, a biography, where you were born, what schools you went to. Those sort of things are facts. They're not very interesting. They don't tell you very much about yourself. A long-range sort of way of writing about who you are is to keep a journal. What you write now could be a start of a journal that you'd keep up, and then when you go back and look at your journal, you'd see what you were last year. You'd see what your thoughts were, what your moods were, what sort of people you were, how you've been growing and changing. I would think that all the writing you do, not only from this program, but from all the programs, if you were to put them together, would be a picture of who you are. You might try looking at yourself from a specific point of view. Suppose that you're somebody else that's looking at you. It could be another self of yourself sitting up on top of the doorpost and watching you and describing you. What are your strong points? What are your weak points? What's interesting about you? What would you change if you could? You might take a specific person looking at you. What sort of person do you suppose you are to your little brother, to your teacher, to some particular friend? How about your enemy? So think about the experiences you've had where you've changed, where you were different this afternoon than you were this morning. Experiences when you had a sudden revelation of who you are, perhaps at some moment of stress, how you behaved. How many sizes have you been today? What are your secret names? How many people do you see in yourself? Who were you yesterday that you aren't today? What have you recently discovered that's interesting about yourself? What is it that makes you special or different from every other person in the world? What is it that you have that no one else has? Who are you?
The Author Is You, a Wisconsin School of the Air series about the process of writing creatively. Today's program was conducted by children's author Jacqueline Jackson. This is Ken Ost for the Wisconsin School of the Air.